Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another great show tonight dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. Yes, that's the combination I like to say. And in addition, it's going to be on a sort of continuation of last week's show dealing with the metaphysical principles involved in politics. And specifically, although it is not exclusively this way, we're going to be talking a lot about U.S. politics because, you know, I'm from the U.S. and I know more about that. I would have difficulty talking about some political systems outside of the U.S., not all of them. But you can call from anywhere in the world, or if you're on another planet, let me know about it. And you can call at 877-876-5227 if you are in the U.S. If you're in Canada, try us at 1-888-815-9756, and you should get through. Now, if you heard last week's show, great. If you didn't, I'm going to give you a very brief synopsis so that you can kind of catch up. And for those of you who did hear last week, of course, I always say something a little different, so it won't be exactly the same as what I said last week. This is only a few minutes because then we're going to go on to new things about this very intriguing subject. Okay, the first thing I think it's important to understand is that the United States, in my opinion, but I think others as well, is one of the greatest experiments so far on this planet in both historical times and maybe even prehistorical times that most people don't even know about. But in any case, at least in historical times, we are attempting to do something in this country which is remarkable. And that is, we are attempting to apply two of the spiritual principles that create thought from the creator or God, I don't care what you want to call it, its own mind. Yeah, we're trying to apply this in terms of our own government. You might say, well, how come? How did that come about? I mean, did it just drop on us? No. It came from the founders, the people who were originally involved in trying to create a new political system, were very in tune with spiritual ideas. And that doesn't mean, I'm not talking about specifically any religion, because they came from different religious backgrounds, but they were highly spiritual people, meaning that they understood some things about their creator at a level that most of the rest of the population, particularly true in the 18th century, had any idea about. And so they wanted to apply these principles. One of the biggest of the big, which I mentioned last week, is that there are really two parts to the thought that makes up spirit and also to the two parts that make up the creation of mind from a infinite being such as God. And those two parts are composed of the following. I'm trying to make it as simple as possible, so please excuse me if it sounds like I'm saying something that is in some way deprecating of a being as great as a creator or something like that. That isn't the purpose at all. I'm just trying to make it simple. And the simplest way I can say it is the first part of this great being's mind is to create freedom, freedom of thought, some levels of freedom of action, and purpose inclusive with freedom. We'll call that, some people would call it will and motive. All this is the first part of the creator's mind. For those of you familiar with the subject of ageless wisdom, it would also apply to the first type of energy, a first ray energy. But that's not important to really understand this. I don't want to confuse people by throwing too much of that stuff around. And the most important part, therefore, the very first thing that the Creator said is, before all else, there needs to be freedom to choose, freedom to be, freedom to create oneself. And the reason for this is that what that self involves is new life, or life itself. To the Creator, life is its means of growth. And the only way this great being can grow is to give freedom to those parts of itself that are growing and changing, and doing so by their own volition and choices. That doesn't mean they can do anything they choose. It just means they have choices And some of those things can lead to definite outcomes, which are helpful, and sometimes they are not. But it doesn't mean they can do anything, because then they would be infinite beings themselves, and they're not. Life itself is the creator's own means of growth, and it can only be true if life is free, free to think, free to choose, if life has purpose, if life has the ability to be creative itself and co-create eventually with its own creator. It takes human beings and beyond to do that. And if life can make choices that are consistent enough that we call it will. Consistency in choices is will. And it's a good thing to have will, because will makes us capable of being able to, we'll say, have a cohesive and unified life, with not only our own life, but life with others as well. It gives consistency, because it's consistency of choice. That's what will is. So it gives consistency to life itself. Very important. All that's part of this first part of the creator's mind. But in order for there to be thought, there has to be a second part. And thought of the creator is what we call spirit. So it's a fantastic thing, really. And for the thought to be completed, the second part of the creator's mind has to be represented in the following way. I love it. Can't wait till you hear this. There needs to be inclusiveness, direction, the ability for the choices to have connectivity from one choice to another that has an effect on the field of choices that the choices are part of, and somehow changes that field. Some people call it limiting the field. If you're a quantum theorist, that's what you would say. And in those limitations in the field, it makes the field more part of both the giant creator we call God and part of the miniature creator that could be us, you see, by doing this spiritual thinking in ourself, we achieve that. Wow. Now, inclusiveness is also love. It's givingness. It's planning. It's all these words. It's all these words. And this is the second part of this great being's mind. These two parts, fascinating as they are on their own, became represented to some extent in the formation of and eventually the carrying out of the, we'll say, the nitty-gritty parts of our government, the U.S. government, our being those of you who are in the U.S., and for those of you who are not, I apologize. But the government of the U.S. is a government that extols these parts as great as any on the planet. It doesn't mean that we always do the right thing. As a matter of fact, it has become so polarized between these two parts that we're going in the wrong direction, which we're going to talk about today. But I think it's extremely important to understand that at the beginning of this process, the founders wanted a government that gave freedom of choice first, freedom of will, freedom to create, freedom to be, which means that the government cannot take those freedoms from us. And that we bestow upon the government the freedom, we'll say, to protect us, the freedom to do certain things that governments in and of themselves need to do that people on individual levels find very difficult to do. So that was the concept. And it was very important that that came before all else. But the second part was government that also protected and gave to the people when people were unable to receive from any other source. Government that was in some ways, parental. I know that sounds terrible, but it's true. And for those of you who are very libertarian and say, oh, I don't want a government that does that, that's terrible, et cetera. Well, remember, I'm saying that the government first has to give freedom before it gives giving. Before it says, for those of you who can't exercise your freedom because you screwed up your life so badly, or because maybe you have bad karma from a prior life, but whatever the situation might be, those of you who need help, government can give to you. But when government does that, it takes a little bit from everybody else in the process, which includes some of their freedom. But the small amounts that each person contributes to add to the second part of government, the love part, we'll call it, if it is wise loving, if it is loving that is truly, truly meeting the needs of others to be more giving themselves rather than just giving them something, then it makes sense. Here's the problem. Now we're going to get into some of the elements that I didn't talk about last week at all. Here's the problem. If you have a government, as we do, that starts giving to people because the politicians are looking to get reelected, or starts giving, they call that porking around or whatever, it's something about pork. And they also call it other things besides. It's corrupt is what it is. And if the politicians as well are doing it to gain prestige and power and control, very bad. And in addition to that, if the government itself is giving to people on a personal level to make them feel better or to just improve them on an individual, selfish, more self-focused level, and not helping those people to become more giving themselves in any long-run situation, then the problem becomes this. Instead of there being a balance to the system of freedom and giving, you have a situation in which the giving side becomes giving for mostly selfish purposes, and it makes the public that is the receiving end of the giving more selfish. A simple explanation of this, for those of who have been around for more than 10 years, will remember the welfare reform plan, right? Because during the 1960s, we developed an idea that we should be giving to people who need help, and what we'll give them is food, shelter, and clothing, literally. And the shelter was going to be some kind of high-rise, almost prison system, and in many cases, in large cities, this was true. And the food thing was going to be some kind of stamp thing that people go in and instead of having trading stamps for picking up lamps or something, they're going to get food with these stamps. And then in addition, they're going to... Okay. Hey, I just found out that about a minute ago they lost the connection. Sometimes that happens. You know, this is live radio. Yeah, and the interesting thing is I've been doing live radio for, it's getting on about 4 years now, and something like that, 3.5 to 4 years. And about every month or so, something happens. I don't know why it is. Is it the moon? Maybe I should be checking this every 28 days. But something happens about once a month that is goofy. And it seems to be consistent. And it isn't just this one radio station. I've been on others, and I'm on others. So it has to do with just the serendipitous nature of the medium, I guess, that it's hard to do live radio. I mean, the fact of the matter is that something is always kind of messing up, I guess. So at any rate, I was talking about welfare and how welfare was the epitome of one of the problems about giving to people without trying to help them to become more giving themselves. It's giving to people at a very selfish and personal level, and it makes them more selfish. It makes them more, we'll say, needy. It makes them more inept and unable, unfortunately, to fend for themselves because they're on the dole. They're getting the money. And it's produced by all the things I said earlier, which I think you picked up on that stuff because I was still on the earth that time, I hope. But at any rate, so this was a very big education for all of us, I think, because in the 60s, and I was around in the 60s, a little political myself. I was kind of that generation. And, you know, the interesting thing about it is that I can remember believing back then that it was really helping people, honestly. I thought this was a good thing, you know. It turned out to not be a good thing, and it took about 30-some-odd years before most of the people realized that, hey, this isn't a good thing. It's not working the way it was supposed to be because people aren't learning how to become more giving themselves or not really advancing themselves in any credible way because they aren't leading a more spiritual life. They're leading a much more selfish life that only leads them into greater levels of despair. So that type of welfare system has been gradually changed in the last 10 years, actually 15 years, to a better system in which people need to find ways of not only improving their self-worth and their self-position, but in some circumstances to become better people, character-wise and many other ways, and become more giving. Now, I would like the system to be even better than this. I think a system that really, really dispels it out. Says, okay, we'll give you a hand up. We'll help you do this, but you have to agree that you're going to help people at this other level for this length of time. Some people call it public service, whatever. But I think that is worthwhile and helpful. And that would correct some of the issues that sort of problem has. But there's so many other problems that we'll call it the people who think giving in unwise ways is the correct way to do. It is a problem that is epidemic virtually throughout all of the politics in our country right now. And it's what's pulling us and separating us from ourselves. Now, other countries are having similar problems with this. This is not an easy thing to understand about what it really means to love somebody. Loving somebody at a high level means helping them to become more loving. It doesn't mean just giving them what they want or even what we think they need. How do you like that? Even that part has to be let go of. Yes, I know. All right, so where does that put us? Okay, we can see now that we have some problems in terms of the way we create ourselves in a political sense. We tend to be a bit too selfish in our loving. But I want to go back to the first part, and I want to talk about that. Sometimes the wrong perspective is gained from the freedom side. Some people say, well, I just want everybody to be free and let the government to help anybody do anything, and that's it. And if you starve to death, you starve to death. And if Katrina hits and you're in a problem, well, go build yourself a boat, you know. But these kinds of issues are usually, again, coming from a person having too selfish of a position. It isn't that they are in some way not espousing freedom. Freedom is a good thing. But they are doing so in a very selfish way. And selfishness on either side of the spectrum of the mind of our Creator creates a problem. It makes our society into an antagonistic, into a, we'll call it, competitive and fighting society among ourselves, rather than a society of unity and, we'll say, cohesiveness and inclusiveness, and a society in which consciousness is valued more than is getting something. More than a goal, more than even knowledge, consciousness becomes the bigger issue. Now, this is going to be very interesting. We're really going to shift gears on you now. And if you want to call in, please do. I mean, I'll stop talking for a few minutes and let somebody else do that. But if you'd like to say something about this, you can certainly do so. But here is an interesting thing. This election, as it's coming about, it's looking to me like the two candidates who are going to be running for the major parties are going to be more conscious than the candidates were in the past that have been running for the same two parties, in general. And that's a good thing. That's a very good thing to have happen, because consciousness is the ability to connect the dots. It's the ability to see that there's oneness instead of separation, that there is a oneness between the freedom side of God's mind and the loving side of God's mind. These two are intimately connected, and if you try to disconnect them, you only end up with some kind of disaster. This is very important because we're moving towards this. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. I'm just saying we're moving towards this. Why do I think that? Why? I think that on the Democratic side, that Barack Obama is probably more conscious than any of the other candidates that are were potentially likely to be a nominee. I think that there was one candidate, this is my opinion, who might have been a bit more conscious than Barack Obama, but he didn't have a chance of being a nominee, and so he's not in there. Those of you who want to know, I'll tell you, it was Joe Biden. I think Joe has really reached a point in his life where his consciousness has grown beyond that of the other people that were running. But that he also had reasons why he wasn't going to be the nominee. We all pretty much knew that as time went by. So it seemed like if we're going to go one way or another, I think that Obama is probably the one who is the most conscious, certainly today, in my opinion. Now, that's not to insult Hillary Clinton, but I don't see her consciousness being at the same level. The real reason people like this guy is because he's more inclusive. Because he, and inclusive, this is part of consciousness, because he is able to connect the dots better. Because, and everybody says, well, he speaks better. Well, you know, what comes out of your mouth has to start someplace before that, unless you're a bumbling idiot. And where it starts is in your mind. That's right. The characteristic of this guy's mind is more inclusive. All right, well, that's a good thing. And so on the Democratic side, I think they got a pretty decent candidate there, assuming that he's going to get the nomination, and it's looking pretty close like that's going to be the case, because other people are picking up on this. Now, they may not define it the way I'm saying. They may say, well, I just like him. Or, yeah, he's got a cool way of speaking. Or maybe I believe him more. I trust him more. I think all those are reasons that people are voting for him. No, I don't think he has more experience. I don't think he knows more about government. I don't think he really has put in the time probably to earn the position to be president in any sense of earning. But if you're more conscious and people pick up on that, and not everybody does, but if they do, I think it's a big ticket. I think that is the thing, this year particularly, that's going to get you somewhere, and it's getting him probably to be the nominee. Okay. Now, what about on the Republican side? I always like, I like getting myself in trouble, so I got to talk about both of these, of course, and so I get in trouble from each side. And in the Republican side, I think John McCain is also a reasonably conscious person. I don't think he's quite as conscious as Barack, but he has other characteristics which make up for it. You know, the interesting thing is consciousness is a huge, important element and probably the single most important to me. But he has other things that are incredibly important, too. He has a kind of a sense of nobility in trying to do the best he can in many circumstances. And he tries also to take a sometimes unpopular side if he thinks that's the side that's right and just. Well, that's a good thing. So I think he does that a little bit more in reality than Barack does. So in other words, if you say which of these two are like rebels against their cause, I would say I would put John McCain more in that category than Barack Obama. So these two candidates have excellent qualities. They are not the same qualities. And on the negative side, if we're looking at the negatives, Barak is to provoke, parochial in his attitude at the present time, parochial in terms of the Democratic Party. What does that mean? He assumes that the Democratic outcry for universal health care and this and that and all these other things, that they're going to take care of all the people and do all of the stuff for them, is a good thing. And it's overbalanced, we'll say, by a lack of freedom of choice, even though he's willing to give a little bit more choice than Hillary does in his health care plan. He's really far over on reducing choice by government making most of them for people. That is his issue. You know, it's a negative issue, but it's not. It doesn't change the fact that he's amazingly conscious and a great guy. And then on John McCain's side, his business, his problem is that he is. Although he makes a point that, oh, well, I'm straight talk and I keep the same thing. Well, he hasn't. John has changed dramatically. I can speak this way because I live in Arizona, so I know this guy a little better than other people. A little bit. I don't know him personally. I just am more familiar with him. And what he's got that is a bit of a problem, in my opinion, is he was more radical, more willing to buck the establishment, more willing to speak his own mind 8 years ago or four than he is today. He got cozy with the president. I think that wasn't the best thing necessarily to do because he thought it was going to be helpful maybe in his run for a nominee. This is years ago. And he kind of wised up that he couldn't buck the party as much as he had been, so he changed his tune. But the problem with that is that he's still trying to do two things at the same time that are kind of hypocritical. Yep. I like to be my own guy, and I also got to play ball with the party. And, you know, this is a problem. Now, I'm not saying that the Democrats don't have the same kind of issue, but I want you to understand that the person who is the true iconoclast and who's way ahead of their party, who is what I call an accepted disciple, accepted for initiation. This is a fancy language for someone who's really creative beyond their own group. They're a leader of their group rather than a follower. That's the kind of person that I think would really help in this world that we have today. Well, I want you to think about all that. We're going to go to one break only because I'm kind of getting a little more time by doing it this way. We're going to go to... We're going right to the 59th minute of the hour because I kind of got on a little late today. So that being the case, we'll go to break right now. When we come back in a couple of minutes, I'll tell you much more about my thoughts about the political system and everything else. And if you want, you can, of course, call in and we'll talk some more about it.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about the metaphysics of political systems. I know that sounds a little strange, but it's sort of like that. And also spiritual principles as they apply. Last week's show was even more, I think, on the spiritual side, because I talked a lot about, instead of the nuts and bolts, I talked about some of the things historically, about the how the founders of this country, the forefathers of their country, wanted to change things, and they had a good reason for it at the time. But I kind of summed that up at the beginning. Okay, let's move ahead and talk about some of the other potential candidates. Now, I said this, I guess, about 2 or 3 months ago, that I thought Barack Obama and Huckabee were the two probably most conscious candidates. Now, that's a strange combination, because they are on opposing parties, and they're almost at opposite ends of the political spectrum. One's pretty left, the other one's pretty right in some respects. And Huckabee is, of course, a very religious social conservative, whereas Obama, wouldn't put him in that category exactly. But nonetheless, between the two of them, they both had the highest consciousness. And let me explain what I mean by that. Huckabee was really, and is, I should say, although he's not going to be the nominee for president, that's pretty clear. But what he carries in himself is what I was trying to explain about John McCain probably having 8 years ago, and that is the ability to say what he means and mean what he says without too much of the politic entering in. Now, I mean, he can say things just for the sake of trying to get your vote. But at the same time, he tries to be his own guy. And he's a much stronger leader, by the way, than either of these two other men. And also stronger than Hillary by far. Hillary's got her own demons. I think she's got demons. Yeah, I'm afraid so. I think the demons probably come from too much ambition and too much desire. You know, if you really desire a tremendous amount for yourself, you can't be one with your own creator. And people pick up on that, and your consciousness can't be as high as someone who's doing the other. So that's what people are picking up on with her. I don't want to say too much negative about her, though, because she's got a lot of positive things in the sense that she has tried very hard to at least get bills passed and to work, do her job. I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, there's a lot of people that get elected to Congress or to, you know, in her case, the Senate, and they don't do their job. And that's a terrible thing. You know, they'd rather go and do something else than even make a vote. So at least she does that. That's good. That's cool. And she's a little bit of carpetbagger there, going to New York to do it, but she knew she could get elected there. What do you know? She's one of those people who's pragmatic about how to do things. All right, so looking at it from the standpoint, getting back to Huckabee, why do I think Huckabee has got this ability? Because he's a little bit higher in terms of being a spiritual person. He's what I call an accepted initiate. And Barack is one stage lower than that. It's called pledged. The only difference between these two isn't in their mind's ability to think. It's that with Huckabee, he's willing to lead his own party. He's willing to lead anybody he's dealing with to get them to see a new vision. Whereas right now, as Barack Obama is, he's following too much the party line. But I think once he becomes president, he could develop this quality that's already in the Huck. I'd like to see Huckabee actually become vice president. For those of you who think that's kind of absurd and it will never happen, you may be right. But at least if he was vice president, I think he would add more consciousness and more leadership to the Republican ticket, which is good. That's a good thing. The better our candidates are, the better our government will be, and the more we'll be able to lead in the world as a country. We've lost a lot of that. This last seven years been terrible with that. And actually, it was long before that. I mean, it's ever since Clinton was impeached and all that business. We just lost a lot of the ability to convince people that our way of life makes sense and that freedom is important and all these other things. And that's a terrible thing because the world needs to believe and to also follow the concept that freedom is a wonderful thing. And without liberty, there isn't anything. But unfortunately, we've damaged that in terms of our image from our presidents, pretty much, but also the government that followed with each president, of course. Okay, so if we were to look at the spiritual side of this, at the present time, I think we've got the best shot in a long time, to get a president who is going to be functionally spiritual. That's a great idea, and at a level that is higher than the last person who was functionally spiritual, who was the original, the first George Bush. He was a spiritual guy in a sense, but his overall capability was what is known as, in metaphysics terms, some people call it ageless wisdom. He was a first-level initiate. That just means that he only spent maybe 10-15% of his day living his life in a spiritual way, connected in consciousness with his own creator. Whereas these people today that are running are second-level initiates. That's much higher. And they're spending 25-30%, up to a third of their day, connected. That's a huge amount of difference, believe me. And so their decisions are going to be much more on the side of God rather than on some other side. And that doesn't mean that someone who doesn't declare themselves to be highly religious, as the second Bush, our present president, does, isn't say something for them. But he's also, unfortunately, a bit dysfunctional, honestly. I don't mean this in any unkind way, but his dysfunctionality seems to come from he's still in a 12-step program. I think he's got to get out of it in order to be successful in what he's doing. And he believes too much in the buddy system. And I mean, he's got all these personal problems in connection with people that he works with. So he keeps a guy in an office for 3.5 years, 4.5 years, whatever, Don Rumsfeld, who, I mean, this guy should have been fired 4.5 weeks after he was in his job for all the goofy things he was doing. And so this really hurt. And he did this in a number of cases. And as a matter of fact, he's been listening to his own vice president to the point where it's kind of ridiculous, too. So, I mean, these are kinds of things that you look at and you say to yourself, well, that person isn't functioning right. That's what I call dysfunctional. I don't mean it in any insulting sense, like, oh, we got a stupid president or something. No, I'm just saying that in a spiritual sense, he's not functional. Because spiritually functional means that you're trying to help people to see a vision that is more of their own creator by making decisions that are really bold in some respects and that are helpful. They don't screw up the world and don't cause other people to dislike this country and that don't get us mired in things that are going the wrong way. Now, whether we should have done the Iraq issue, you know, I'll tell you something. If it were up to me, I'd get rid of Saddam Hussein in a New York minute. For real. The guy was a real jerk and he needed to go. But the point is that the way the war was executed was possibly the worst execution of any war in the history of the United States. I mean, you know, we have done terrible things in wars. We've made massive mistakes. But this war was like a consistent day-in and day-out mistake. And when you do that kind of stuff, you know, you can't use bad judgment. You know, you have 100,000 bombs laying in some yard someplace, and you tell all the insurgents and al-Qaeda people to come in and have a holiday and make sure that they close the door on their way out, because so there won't be a draft on the remaining bombs. I mean, you talk about being crazy. I mean, you got to have some kind of screw loose to do that sort of stuff. And we did it. And to not stop looting and other things after you take over a country because they've lost a war is ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. You take out a responsibility by winning a war more than you do if you lose it. You become the government of that country for a significant period of time. And then tell people, well, you got to govern yourselves tomorrow. But you don't have any electricity, you don't have any food, you don't have any military or police, but you're going to have to govern yourself. And if you don't like it, too bad. Well, no, that doesn't make sense either. So we did a lot of things that were wrong, and so, but we kept doing it for years. I mean, come on, you got to learn a little something. You got to figure that, you know, okay, I think I'll be a little reflective and say that maybe I should fire four or five people that are really screwed up in my government, and maybe I should get on television and say, you know what, everybody? I made a mistake. I've screwed up. So sorry. These are the things I'm going to do to correct it. It's called humility. Humility means that somebody is functioning somewhat spiritually rather than dysfunctionally. If someone doesn't have it, believe me, you can bet on the fact that they lack humility. There's a wonderful book that is part of the Upanishads, and it's this little tiny book, which has been read by a vast number of people, has led a lot of people to change their mind about what it means to even be a soul. In this book, it says that the way you know a soul first is by its humility, its meaning, his or her humility. And when someone doesn't have it, that's a scary thing, particularly if they're president. Beware of that, always. Okay, so what can we do now? Where are we going? Well, I think we have two people running that are much more humble than the predecessors have been in the past. They have, with that humility, a sense of, we'll say, more of the future that will be helpful. And I think we're headed for a definitely more spiritual government. Not more religious. I'm not talking about religion here. I'm talking about spiritual, meaning that they would be more connected to the thought of what we call spirit itself, God's thought. And I think that we're getting closer to that, which is a great thing. Because if we don't reach that soon, I think we're headed for a really disastrous future. Disastrous in the sense that I think we are Great Britain in the 1930s right now. We are moving quickly towards disaster in the sense of losing a grip on what it means to be a leader in the world and for us to no longer be able to operate from a position of moral authority. We will lose almost all of the things that made this country great if we don't get leaders leading us who are spiritual. And we've got to get that. I mean, it's really important. If we reach a point that we really have given up on that, I think that we'll be in terrible, terrible trouble. I'm not just talking about economic stuff. I know the economy's not good now. I know that. And I understand all the other things that are happening to people. But I'm talking about something that's much deeper than that. It's like the very soul of this country is at stake right now. But the good news is, as far as I can tell, the two major parties are putting up better candidates than they have in the past. We've got a better shot at it. John McCain is not as high a, we'll call it second-level initiate, as Barack Obama. But both of them have good characteristics, and they could supply some things that we need in our government, either one. either one, honestly. It would be a great improvement. I'm sure neither one of them would allow Rumsfeld to be running the Defense Department for more than a few minutes if they ever put him in that position. And he's not the only guy to blame about this. I mean, we've had a lot of problems in what we're doing in our government. Congress is messed up, too, by the way. We've had a lot of people doing a lot of bad things. Very greedy, extreme greed, not just from Democrats, not just from both sides, just doing whatever they can to put pork in the budget and to get people to vote for them because they gave them something. That's a terrible thing, spending money like crazy, all that other stuff. Yep, it's a mess. It's a mess. But we can clean it up this year, and it's fantastic. All this is based upon, us understanding what it is that's really going on. And I'm hoping that this show maybe just a little bit explains some of it. I hope so. I hope that this is making some sense to all of you. Just my thoughts again. I mean, I, these are my opinions and thoughts. This is not like, oh, this is the way it has to be or something like that. What else do I want to tell you? Well, I'd like you to know that if we're going to really, really move ahead as a country, although these candidates who I've been talking about are certainly a step up from where we've been, there needs to be, seriously, an effort to get a candidate even higher in consciousness than anybody who's run so far that I'm aware of. And that candidate needs to be what I call a third-level initiate. What does that mean? It's someone who is revolutionary in new thought, someone who comes up with completely, fantastically new ideas and plans that changes the direction for maybe a century. And we've only had a few people like that. Thomas Jefferson was one of them, for those of you who have read anything historically. But there's been a few other presidents. And then you have to go to other countries, unfortunately, because the United States tends to, because of the body politic, because we elect people, we tend to not want to elect people that are too far ahead of us in consciousness. We tend to elect a guy that's just like the guy we know next door. Well, that problem is that guy next door may not be able to do much better than we can do in terms of leading this country, and that's not a good thing. All right, so that's our problem. We tend to have this consistently in the way that we vote. We like to have people that are very much like ourselves, whether it's our sex, unfortunately, or it's our background, or in some cases these days, whether it's our race, which is really amazing. I want to tell you something about race. I want to throw this in as quickly as I can. I still got about 7 minutes left. On race, think of it this way. Each of us are going to incarnate again. The people today that are African-American, many of them, but not all of them, were not African-American in a prior lifetime, or at least the last couple of lifetimes. In some cases, this is going to shock you, they may have been slave owners, if you go back a couple of lifetimes, and now they're being born as African-American, maybe as a disadvantaged African-American, especially. To learn all about that and what it means. It's a fascinating idea. So this idea of race, we really have to get over it because we've all been or will be some other race. Yep, that's the way it's going to be. And the idea eventually is that it helps us to overcome selfishness and separation and becoming bigoted and hostile towards people who aren't exactly like ourselves. That is the development of higher consciousness. So it's a great thing. It's a very fantastic thing to have other races. And what about this business? Well, I don't like mixing the races. How can you not mix races if we all have been a different race? You have to think outside the box of one lifetime. That's the point. Now, I know some of you are saying, well, but I don't remember having been any other race. Well, you can't remember a lifetime in which you were at least 60%. That's a huge number. Virtuous. Otherwise, you just don't have continuity of consciousness. And that's the problem. You won't remember. at least not in any consistent basis. Here and there you may have a moment or two, but you won't have a consistent memory. Okay, so there's a lot more to say, I guess, about this whole subject, but I guess I'm going to have to sum it up this way. If we want to have a better world, and we want to have a government that is going to be consistent as the improver of that better world, we need to vote for people who are more conscious. We need to vote for people who have more virtuous qualities to them, besides not only consciousness, but many of the other factors that make a person a great person. Those are the things that we should be voting for. Forget about experience and all the other stuff. Put that first on your list, because that's what is going to make the difference. Not whether somebody has been in Congress for 50 years or 20 years or whatever, but who they are, what's inside them. And if you can't figure that out, give me a call. I'll tell you about it. I guess I already did on this show. But hopefully you won't need to give me a call, because you will already have figured it out for yourself. I think that's wonderful. Okay. Then one other thing I want to sum up about this subject is this. If we are going to truly, truly have a great government, we also have to realize that the government, just like the forefathers said, comes from the authority first of God and then of the people. Now, some of you might say, I didn't know that. Well, you got to go read the Declaration of Independence, because that's where it says that. The authority does not come from the people first. It comes from the Creator. That's the word that's used. The Creator gives inalienable rights to the people, who then decide what kind of government they will have and how and in what ways it shall function or not. So you see, that's how it works. Right now, we have a problem with this, because there's a desire to get rid of the Creator. And that's why I'm making this show so much about spirit, because if you get rid of the Creator, you end up with a hollow government that does terrible things, from communism of various different governments to every dictatorship under the sun, and to going back in time to the Napoleonic age and to the terrible things that were done in the name of the right of the citizen. Well, that's all bullshit, because the rights come from the Creator, and that comes from the two parts of the mind of that Creator that I told you about. There is a third part, by the way. That part has to do with action or activity. That's a separate show just to even talk about that. But the two parts that have to do with its thought always involve these great ideas of freedom and inclusiveness together, and a direction to freedom that makes other people free at the same time. It doesn't lessen theirs. Very important to know that. Okay, we're out of time for that subject. I just want to let you know that for those of you on March 2nd who may be in, I'm sorry. This is about my radio show on March 2nd. On March 2nd, I'm going to be talking about the plan for our planet, and you can get that at 11:70 a.m. if you're anywhere in the northeastern part of the United States. And if not, you can get it on WDISAM.com, just like you're listening to me right now, anywhere in the world. And it's on from 4 to 5 Eastern Standard Time, or GMT minus 8 for those of you who know how to figure that out. I don't, but that's okay. And then the last thing I want to mention is that if you are in the Phoenix area, particularly on the west side of Phoenix in Glendale, on March 3rd, that's Monday, Mimi's going to be talking about life after death, which is an interesting subject. I won't be able to attend that, but she will be there. She's one of the members of the spiritual group I'm a member of. And if you can get there between 7 and, say, a little bit after that, it'll be from 7 to 8:15, and she'll be talking about that subject. Of course, there's no charge, and it's open to the public at large. Borders, Books, and Music in Glendale, 7320 West Bell Road. Come and listen to her. Okay, well, we are running out of time. And until next week, I want you to think about this, that in today's show, we mostly talked about spirit and metaphysics as it applies to politics, but you can see that in every walk of life, the Creator is always a part of what is really going on behind the scenes. Think about that, and until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.